Many around the world have expressed outrage over a Minnesota dentist's killing of Cecil, a popular African lion living on a wildlife sanctuary in Zimbabwe. While Cecil's killing may have been illegal, trophy hunting of animals like lions is allowed in Zimbabwe and some other African countries. Should it be? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 9 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, August 4th. We will talk with a National Geographic writer about conservation, trophy hunting, and the challenge of protecting endangered species during this hour. And we will welcome your questions and your reaction. What is your reaction to the story about Cecil the lion? Do you think trophy hunting should be banned? Should the U.S. block imports of hunting trophies if they're from endangered animals? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Brian Clark Howard is a writer for National Geographic. He has written several articles about the story of Cecil the lion, which appeared on nationalgeographic.com. Good morning.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being with us. I think we've all heard now a lot about Cecil the lion, but tell us why this killing has inflamed so many.
Well, Cecil was actually one of the most famous lions in Africa. He's been studied for a number of years as part of a long-term Oxford University study, and he is a lion that was not that much afraid of people, so he's one of the most photographed lions. If you look online, there's thousands of pictures and videos of Cecil where people really enjoyed watching him. And he has a name and kind of a catchy name at that.
Yeah. So, what do we know about how he died?
Well, the Zimbabwe wildlife officials have said a lot about it. So they've alleged that around July 1st, a hunting group was looking for a lion. According to the authorities, they did not have a permit to kill a lion, which is required in the country, although the dentist says that he believed he had paid for a permit. The wildlife officials said there was no permit issued. So they tracked the lion for some time, and the officials say that they actually took some kind of a carcass of an animal and tied it to their car and drove around the outskirts of the park, of Hwenge National Park, which is a jewel in Zimbabwe's park system. Now, baiting lions is not legal in Zimbabwe, but officials allege they did this for a while, and then Cecil reportedly came out of the park, and then Palmer allegedly shot it with a bow and arrow, which is also not legal in Zimbabwe. Cecil did not die, but wandered off. For about 40 hours, the hunting group allegedly tracked him, and then when they found him again, he was allegedly shot with a gun.
Yeah. And this happened in early July, yet I guess the outrage really blew up last week. Why did it? Is that when we learned that this Minnesota dentist was probably behind it?
Yes, well, it's interesting to see the sort of track of the outrage online. Initial reports were that the hunter was allegedly Spanish, and so for several weeks it was front-page news in Spain. There was a lot of outrage in Spain, and I really don't know why people thought it was a Spanish shooter. But then when it came out last week, that it was allegedly an American shooter, the outrage sort of shifted to the U.S., and it built a little bit gradually at first online. It was stoked by a number of animal rights, animal welfare groups in the U.S. Some online petitions started, and the story really took off online.
So, as you mentioned, the Minnesota dentist said that he thought that he was participating in a legal hunt, thought that his guides were following the law. But, you know, it seemed that the outrage online, nobody cared that he thought it was legal. They thought this was outrageous anyway.
Well, yeah, it's interesting to see. Legal lion hunting has had a long and complex history. And it's really through the advent of social media that the outrage has grown a lot. If you look at the trophies that people have requested to bring into the United States, in the past there were literally no public comments about it. Really no one knew about it. But over the last couple years, with the rise of social media, people have heard about these requests. And each one now has been met with hundreds of thousands of comments and lots of online outrage. I've seen a couple cases over the last year or two where people have posted photos on their Facebook accounts about lion hunts, legal lion hunts they've gone and done, and they've just been met with lots of criticism and outrage online. I think it's really spurred by social media. In the past, people just didn't really know this was going on, even though it was.
Yeah. Well, yeah, talk a little bit about that. I thought the African lion was endangered.
Well, that's a complicated question. So lions in Africa have declined by more than 80% over the last century. We know there used to be more than 200,000 across the continent, and now the best science is there's probably less than 30,000. So it's a very dramatic decline. Now, the U.S. government does not officially consider African lions endangered yet. They'd actually have no listed status, so they're not considered vulnerable either. That could change very soon. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is actively evaluating the African lion, and they're expected by the end of the year to give it a new status, which a lot of people think could be at least threatened, possibly endangered. If that happens, then there's going to be a lot more restrictions on what Americans can do in terms of hunting, which is significant because in Africa, 65% of legal trophy hunting is done by Americans.
Yeah, and so how important is legal trophy hunting in Africa?
Well, so internationally, trade in lions is still restricted by the international treaties. So a country can only allow hunting of lions, only give out legal permits of lions, if they can meet some very specific criteria. For one, they have to show that any hunting would be based on science. So they have to show that any individuals that are hunted would not harm the overall survival of the species in that country. Now, that's actually not very easy to do. Lions are not very easy to track, to study. The science is improving, but nobody really knows exactly how many lions there are, and there's a lot of debate about if you kill a specific lion, will that impact the population? In some cases, a specific lion can result in the death of 25 or more cubs. But in other cases, removing a specific lion might actually result in more lions being produced because they might be an older lion that's preventing younger ones from reproducing. But that's something that scientists have to figure out. Also, any legal lion permits, a significant amount of the money must go towards conservation of the species, and it must also benefit the local community. Now, that's also pretty difficult to measure, because these are often very remote areas. Unfortunately, there's a lot of corruption and inefficiencies in Africa. And so critics say that this standard is not always being met, that some of the money that the hunters are paying is not necessarily going to lion conservation. It might be, say, lining the pockets of officials.
You mentioned about the possibility that the death of one lion, and we heard this about Cecil, could result in the death of many cubs. Explain why that is.
Yeah, so lions have complex societies. Most types of cats around the world are mostly solitary, but that's not true with lions. They have pretty complex social interactions. Many people are probably familiar with the term pride. Mm-hmm. So a typical pride has one dominant male, and then around half a dozen female lionesses, and then a number of cubs. It could be 20, 50, sort of depending. So lions are very opportunistic, and if the dominant male is removed, pretty quickly another male will take his place. In order to get there, they'll often fight, sometimes to the death. But once a male does sort of take over the pride, often what he'll do is murder all the previous cubs so then he can, as quickly as possible, get his own bloodline going. and get his own cuts in there.
Yeah. And we have just a minute before a newscast. There were reports over the weekend, turns out false reports, that Cecil's brother Jericho had also been illegally hunted. This is not true.
Yeah, so I think this goes to the fact that it's a very remote area in Zimbabwe, and it's difficult to get accurate information. So Jericho was the number two, he is the number two in line in Cecil's pride. He's sometimes described as Cecil's friend. He's not actually his biological brother. Mm-hmm. But there's been concern all along that Jericho would take over and that he might murder his cubs. But Jericho actually is alive and well.
We will talk more about the story of Cecil the Lion and how his killing has resulted in international outrage over trophy hunting. We are talking about Cecil the Lion, poaching, and trophy hunting with Brian Clark Howard, who is a writer for National Geographic. He has written many articles about the story of Cecil the Lion, which appear on nationalgeographic.com. If you would like to join in with a question or a reaction to the story about Cecil and whether or not you think trophy hunting should be banned or whether or not the U.S. should block imports of animal trophies, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Gary on Facebook says, I am not convinced that the hunter had intentionally broken any laws or that he deserves to be mercilessly crucified by the media as he has been. It looks to me that he just may have paid good money that people there depend on to make a living in order to engage in illegal activity. So is that about right, Brian Clark Howard?
Well, it's interesting because it goes to how murky it is on the ground there. So it's, you know, one of the things that it's illegal to do in Zimbabwe is to shoot a lion that has a tracking collar, because that's a lion that would be involved in a scientific study. And the problem is with female lions, it's pretty easy to see the collar because they don't have a mane. But Cecil had a very thick, shaggy mane that has a lot of black in it. And so it's really difficult, especially at night or low light, to see the collar. So what actually the hunters say is that they didn't see the collar. And when once they shot Cecil, they saw the collar, and in the words of one of the guides, they freaked out. So they allegedly took the collar off then and tried to destroy it. But it goes to how difficult it is to target specific lions. Also, the lions do often travel long distances. They're pretty good swimmers, though they're not really known for that, but they can swim across rivers. So it's difficult to keep them confined to certain areas. So some people say that because of the murkiness suggests that they shouldn't have any lion hunting, but because it can be a challenge to manage.
Yeah. And he did pay good money, well, we hear about $50,000 to do this.
Yeah, so it's interesting that you know, he says he believed that money went to a legal permit, and the money is supposed to be used for conservation in the country and to support local communities. He actually did what you're supposed to do, which is that he used a guide that was part of the country's professional association. The guides have since been suspended from that. But it also goes to how difficult it is to make sure you are doing a illegal hunt because, you know, you can only ask so many questions, and if people are telling you one thing and then doing another, sometimes it's hard to figure that out. But it does raise the question of how culpable a Palmer is in any alleged crimes. We talked to a legal expert yesterday. He says it's going to be an interesting case because the Zimbabwe government says that they'd like to bring charges against Palmer. They have not done so yet. But one of the things they have to figure out is which crime, if any, he could be culpable for. You know, was it baiting the lion? Was it using the bow? Was it actually killing the lion? Or, you know, how much are his guides responsible?
Let's take a call from Mark in Green Bay. Hello, Mark.
Yes, I have an interest in Zimbabwe in that, well, this would be a slight aside, but I think Joey was talking yesterday morning about new shows that they could have on public radio. And I think one of the shows would be the news you wanted to hear but never got to hear. And in 2000, I was in, like, Lithuania, Poland, and there were all these young white...
Mark, are you going to talk about... I'm sorry.
Riding their bicycles?
You need to talk about trophy hunting in this story now.
I'm just saying that these guys were being hunted by Mugabe. And then Africa begins to starve as they've killed off all the white farmers. And the one thing that was going to save Zimbabwe was trophy hunting, because all of these species are just being poached to death. And this harvesting was presented as the one thing that was going to be able to save the lions and the elephants.
Yeah.
And then, of course, being Africans, what they have done is, you know...
Well, let me just ask, Brian, so this legal trophy hunting was going to save Zimbabwe, but it's not?
Yeah, so, you know, Zimbabwe is one of the world's poorest countries, and they do have a lot of problems with corruption. So they had high hopes that the legal trophy hunting could bring in needed foreign money. So actually, it brings in about $20 million U.S. dollars a year, which doesn't sound like a whole lot, but it does go farther there. That's about 3.2% of its total tourism budget. But the stakes are pretty high here from Zimbabwe because they're trying to increase tourism into the country. It's been a little bit of a challenge. It's not high on people's radar to go to. And at the same time, they would like to preserve their legal lion trophy hunting. I think, you know, that it's under a lot of questions now whether they can manage it. So they're really scrambling. I think that's why they're working extra hard to try to prosecute this case and to kind of close this case and then move forward, because the stakes are high for them.
Yeah, so tourism includes someone like me wanting to go on a safari and maybe shoot pictures of lions, but not shoot them with a gun.
Yes, that's the vast majority of people. So, you know, a lot of people say they should only do that, which is actually a lot of countries in Africa, that's how it is. They don't allow trophy hunting anymore. The challenge is that a number of the areas where there are lion hunts, there really were no other tourists go. They're extremely inaccessible. There's no development or services. They're maybe not quite as safe as some of the other more well-known places. So some of those more remote communities are the ones that are often asking for trophy hunting.
Yeah. And so how much does conservation rely on trophy hunting then?
Well, it depends country to country. That's an interesting and ongoing debate. There have been some studies. A study in Namibia found that it was a significant percentage of the conservation dollars did come from trophy hunting. Trophy hunting is still legal there. It's difficult because there's the overall money that's raised in a country, and then there's sort of by specific areas or communities. So some areas, they really don't need it. You know, some areas there's no trophy hunting allowed. They have robust photo tourism. And then other areas there really isn't any photo tourism, and they heavily depend on the trophy hunting. So it kind of depends area to area. Mm-hmm. Overall, though, that 3.2% is kind of typical. So we're not talking about a large percentage of the overall pie.
We are talking with Brian Clark Howard. He's a writer for National Geographic, and he has written a number of articles now on the story of Cecil the Lion and his illegal killing on a or just off of a wildlife sanctuary in Zimbabwe, and the outrage that this story has prompted worldwide. We are talking about whether trophy hunting should be legal or not, or whether the U.S. ought to ban the importation of hunting trophies, especially if they're from endangered animals. So what do you think? What questions do you have? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Jerry on Facebook posted a photo of a room full of trophies and says, there are some pretty disgusting photos circulating of several other great white hunters showing the hunter sitting in their trophy room, like this one, which includes a rhino, a polar bear, a leopard, and even elephant tusks, among dozens of other animal skins and animal heads. These hunters may still be alive when some of these species go extinct. What kind of moral bragging rights do these people have? Well, what about that, the morality of this?
So that's an interesting question. It's, you know, hunting has a very long history, of course. And, you know, another thing I'm finding is that there's a pretty big disconnect between subsistence hunters, or hunters who eat what they shoot, and trophy hunters. And there is some interesting animosity sometimes between the two groups, with some subsistence hunters telling me that they feel like some of these trophy hunters are giving them a bad name. It's also interesting to see in Africa itself how this whole story is being perceived, and it's definitely being looked at with shades of colonialism. There's a long history of great elitism, both in terms of great white hunters that come into the country, but then also the industry that supports them is, for many Zimbabweans especially, it's often seen as very elitist. It's it's like the 1% that's kind of benefiting from that. Now, that's sort of contrary to what's supposed to happen by international treaty. Any money raised through conservation hunting, as some call it, is supposed to also benefit the local communities. But right now in Zimbabwe, you're seeing stories where some of the communities are saying they don't feel like they're getting a fair share. So this touches on a lot of issues of race, power, colonialism, too.
Yeah, very interesting. So in the news this morning, we noticed that Delta, United, and American Airlines have all banned the transport of trophies from hunting lions, buffalo, elephants, leopards, or rhinoceroses. So was that expected?
Yeah, to some extent. It's following Emirates Airlines had done so. I believe it was late last year, South African Airlines as well. It's interesting to see how now it's spread to American carriers, probably because there's been so much outrage in the U.S. Being that a Minnesota dentist is accused of being involved in this. So you're seeing record levels of engagement online. Actually, hundreds of thousands of dollars have been raised over the last week for lion conservation, which is an important part of the story because lions actually are threatened more not from legal hunting, but from illegal hunting, and even more from habitat loss and loss of prey. So there's a lot of people who are hoping that the tragic death of Cecil will turn into something good, which is increased public awareness. And I think with these recent announcements, you're kind of seeing some of that awareness come to effect.
What about the other animals? Like, I just saw a story about some species of rhinoceros that just went extinct. I mean, these other animals are in trouble too, aren't they?
Yeah, so there's only four left of a rare subspecies of white rhino in the world, and they're mostly in zoos. There's one in a game park that's guarded 24 hours a day by a whole contingency of armed soldiers, heavily armed. And that just kind of goes to show how the state of a lot of wildlife in Africa. A lot of people who haven't been there think that Africa still has these vast savannas of huge herds of animals. And they do, but they're it's much less than what was there before, and it's not really truly wild, 100% wild anymore, because, frankly, they have to be protected. The biggest threat from the hunting or poaching standpoint is really primarily the Asian market for skins, for bones, and for other products that are often used in traditional medicines or used as status symbols. So there's still a huge market for poaching. In Hwange National Park, which is where Cecil lived, there is a big poaching problem. There's a unit that the Oxford researchers fund, and they go around, and every day they just cut snares set by poachers to really catch any animals that they can. So it's an ongoing problem.
Yeah, the Washington Post had a story that while the world was focused on Cecil, five endangered elephants were illegally killed in Kenya. So, you know, regardless of legal trophy hunting, what can be done to prevent illegal poaching?
Yeah, so rhinos, elephants, and lions are kind of the big three right now in Africa in terms of very high poaching numbers. They've all declined dramatically over the last decade or two. I would say a lot of people point to the sort of positive development, though, that countries are really starting to get engaged in this. The U.S. government is really actively working on it. We're working closer than ever with China, which is the biggest market for animal products, and with a lot of local folks. There's still a problem, too, of what's called bush meat, which is that when local people get hungry, they'll shoot kind of anything they can. There's different ways that that's being addressed. There's a lot of education campaigns going on. There's studies that show a lion, for example, alive in Zimbabwe is worth several million dollars over its life, mostly from all the tourists that it brings in, whereas a lion dead is worth just a couple hundred dollars as meat. So once people are educated about this, they're often getting that message. And there's a lot of things that can be done, too, to decrease tensions with people, because a lot of lions, a lot of those snares that are set even aren't so much for meat. They're to get rid of predators because people are afraid that they might eat their goats or their sheep. But there's ways that we can work to help protect those animals. For example, putting up fences and scaring off predators if they come near where people live.
Let's take a call from Keith in Beaver Dam. Hi, Keith.
Yes, I always thought I'm a hunter, and I have a problem with people that, I mean, in this country, we usually shoot, and just to go and shoot another animal and just skin it. I'm for it if in Africa, if the native people can share in the bounty of it, when it's such as an elephant and they're starving and things like that would help them out, but I think it's a waste, you know.
Trophy hunting it exclusively is a waste, Keith.
I think so. This goes into another area, but I've seen people hunt ducks in my area. And they shot a mallard, and the head wasn't green enough, and they were disappointed. I also see people go out pheasant hunting. Goose hunting, deer hunting, they only take the choice meat and they throw the rest away. And I've got a big problem with that. I've hunted for a long time, so it isn't just in Africa.
Yeah, so Keith is one who believes, you know, shoot for subsistence or, you know, to use the hunt, not waste anything. And you say, Brian, that you hear that quite often.
Yeah, it's this interesting sort of gulf between those who hunt to eat and those who hunt more for the thrill. There's been some interesting work on whether this idea of catch-and-release hunting, it's been tried a few times. South Africa tried it and then outlawed it because they thought it was too hard to manage at the local level. But the idea was that people would pay to stalk big game and then shoot it with a tranquilizer, and then scientists would get samples that they needed to study it, and the animal would live another day and the hunter got to the thrill of the chase. Uh-huh. Unfortunately, this has proven to be pretty difficult to actually manage. It's, for one thing, when you dart an animal, it might fall off a cliff or break its leg, mm-hmm. or it might, in some cases, they were dying from heat exhaustion, and it was kind of expensive to manage to make sure that it's being done properly. But that's one idea that's still bandied about to, you know, possibly give people the thrill of the hunt without the waste, as the caller suggests.
We're going to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about poaching, trophy hunting, and Cecil the lion. Well, this is interesting. We'll pick up on this after the news. Brad on Twitter says, "Where is all the outrage for trophy fishing? Seems hypocritical to only care about furry animals. I am for hunting. Period." So what about that? What do you think? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with Brian Clark Howard, a writer for National Geographic. And we're talking about the issues of poaching and trophy hunting in light of the killing of Cecil the Lion in Zimbabwe, a popular African lion living on a wildlife sanctuary in Zimbabwe. And while Cecil's killing may have been illegal, trophy hunting of animals like him is allowed in Zimbabwe and some other African countries, and we're wondering if it should be, or what efforts should be made to make it illegal. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. A listener on Facebook says, when will we learn that making it profitable to kill threatened species is only going to hurt the country that is sponsoring it? I applaud Delta Airlines and other airlines for their policy of not bringing back any animal trophies. What about you? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So, Brian, I actually shared before our newscast a tweet from Brad who said, it seems hypocritical to only care about furry animals that he's for hunting, presumably even trophy hunting. He says, where's all the outrage for trophy fishing?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. There's lots of fish around the world are very endangered, and a lot of them are because of human harvesting. That's true both for freshwater and saltwater. In the U.S., the government has been ramping up control of wildlife products, because a lot of fish as well as other animal products are smuggled illegally into the U.S. and to other countries. Even though we talk a lot about China, Asia being the biggest market for wildlife products, which it is, but the U.S. is not far behind as a big market. There's a lot of people here that buy things that they shouldn't, that are illegal. And interestingly, it's a lot of the same networks that smuggle drugs, weapons, and even people that smuggle unlicensed wildlife products. So it is a big problem.
Let's go to Sarah in Sheboygan Falls. Hi, Sarah.
Yes, hi. The U.S. is very, very guilty of we're the second importer of elephant tusks from illegal poaching. I don't think that hunting of any kind should be allowed. We've disrupted nature so badly that they use the excuse that they need to hunt to kill something. I don't understand it. But there's also canned hunting in Africa where they raise lions for trophy as well as bone wine, which I don't understand that at all.
I don't either. But what about canned hunts? Does that happen in Africa too, Brian?
Yes. It's very big business in South Africa in particular. Interestingly, the South African Hunting Association is now calling for a reevaluation of the so-called canned hunting. It is big business, but it's increasingly unpopular among the public, both there and in the U.S. and some other countries. So it's now is a good. I think we're seeing a moment where a lot of people are discussing these issues. I would agree with the caller that it's often counterintuitive, the idea that you could hunt something to save it, especially when you're talking about a rare animal like a lion. I think a lot of people are raising that question. I think it's become more difficult in the wake of recent incidences for the hunters that support that idea. They're having a harder time, I think, making that case. So it's interesting to see what will happen.
When I said I didn't understand, she said something about bone wine. Do you know what she's
referring to? Yes. So it's traditional Chinese remedy that so they take the bones and grind it up and make a kind of wine out of it. and it's supposed to, traditionally then it's used for various medicinal benefits. So Western scientists have studied a lot of these remedies, and they said that they don't work. But, you know, it's an interesting cultural question. In China right now, and Thailand and some other Asian countries, there's a big movement to discredit a lot of those traditional remedies and to let people know. Well, take ivory, for example. There was a recent survey in China. A large percentage of people had no idea that they actually have to kill the elephant to take the tusk. People really thought that the tusks fell out like a human's teeth, which they do not do.
You know, can the U.S. do more to help prevent poaching, especially if, as our caller mentioned, we're, you know, such a big importer illegally of ivory, or is that even legal?
Yes, it's, so ivory is, it's illegal to import any ivory into the U.S. That's been the case since 1989. A lot of ivory is slipping in. There have been some recent high-profile busts. The current administration has made it a high priority to sort of crack down on this, in part because our stance internationally in discussing endangered species and wildlife issues has really been hurt because people say, oh, well, look, you're the second biggest ivory market in the world. What are you guys doing to stop about it? You're just telling us not to do it. So there's been a big effort to try to tamp that down.
You know, so we have this Minnesota dentist, Walter Palmer, who is, accused of killing Cecil illegally. We also just learned of a Pennsylvania doctor also illegally killed another lion in Zimbabwe in the spring. So now people are learning about this. I'm just trying to wonder if this outrage will discourage people like them from trophy hunting.
It's a little hard to say, but I would suspect that it would. In fact, there are some trophy hunters I've talked to recently who are freaked out. They are worried about repercussions. I think, a couple years ago, people really didn't know people were doing this. Palmer has said that he hasn't told most of his patients over the years, so it's not like his office is festooned with heads or something, which might have been the case in a previous generation. I think it just goes to show that there is a cultural shift going on, and I think people are sort of less accepting of trophy hunting.
Mm-hmm. And do trophy hunters say that why do they do it?
A lot of it is about the thrill, the challenge of the hunt. It's interesting. Some people who do participate in these canned hunts, the ones I've talked to, they often strongly object to the term canned hunt because my experience, it kind of depends a lot on how it's managed. In the worst case scenario, the guide kind of aims the gun for you and you just pull the trigger. You don't do much work. That's kind of what a lot of people think it's like. The other end of the spectrum, it could take days across a huge area of land where they're tracking an animal and then shooting it themselves, so it's more like a traditional hunt. One of the problems with canned hunts is they're not that well regulated, especially in some countries, so you could have more things could be kind of at the bad end than the good end. But a lot of hunters I've talked to really do believe in the conservation message. Sometimes they're frustrated. They feel like it's hard for people that don't do what they do to feel, to understand where they're coming from. But I think it is kind of a difficult message. And one of the things that's important to remember is even though the idea might be pure, sometimes as it's practiced on the ground, it can get murky, as seems to be the case with the dentist.
We're almost out of time, so I'm going to ask a question that a caller was going to bring up. And if you could be really brief in answering it. She wondered if shooting Cecil with a crossbow and then allowing him to wander to be, hunted, is that standard practice, to wound the animal first?
No, I don't think they're not supposed to do that. They're not supposed to use bows either. But I think it goes to show that things don't always go right.
Yeah, Logan in Green Bay is with us. Hi, Logan.
Hi, Joy. Being a former South African, I can tell you, how the local people think. And I would say the overwhelming majority of them are against hunting, especially for trophy hunting. And I myself find it absolutely disgusting that somebody would want to take a life of another creature, be it human or other animal.
Yeah.
And it mainly foreigners that come there to hunt, and we resented that for years. And the government, of course, is taking into account.
Thank you, Logan. I'm sorry, we're almost out of time. Since the World Wildlife Fund and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service both support legal, well-managed trophy hunting, with the way people are talking about Cecil's death, do you think that position, their position, may change, Brian?
I think it is likely, because I think we are seeing a cultural shift.
Yeah, so you can say more than that.
I specifically asked the World Wildlife Fund this, and they haven't, they're not ready to respond yet, but I think it is likely that there is kind of a shift away from conservation hunting right now. There's a lot of momentum against it. I think, the one thing that's interesting is that the scientists keep saying that although it's an important issue with trophy hunting, it's not the most important. The most important is still retaliatory killings, local poaching and habitat loss. So there's a lot of things to work on at once. But some have also said that if outrage over trophy hunting is what's going to bring people to the table to support conservation, then maybe that's an important step. Because the flip side is that conservation hunters have always said there isn't enough money to do the job of conservation, and they're the only ones that are filling the hole. So that's right now, over the last few weeks, there's been so much money raised that maybe that's not true anymore. I think that's sort of been the last big argument for conservation hunting. So if people step up and that becomes not true, then I think that might be the tipping point.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Brian Clark Howard is a writer for National Geographic. He has written several articles about the story of Cecil the Lion, which appear on nationalgeographic.com. Thanks to Christy Taylor and to Elizabeth Delaquest for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.